Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I am your host, and I am honored by your wise decision to once again tune in and invest in yourself today. The Business Creators Radio Show takes you to those places where you have those aha moments and mastermind meetings that can change your trajectory or at least bring you a little bit closer to serving from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. So today we are going to be covering something that is actually in a way near and dear to my heart. And I'm excited that for the first time ever, we're going to be able to look at this from this particular angle. It's about the hidden dangers of focusing excessively on operational efficiency. Now, wait. People say, what? You're focusing excessively on operational efficiency? You shouldn't be operationally efficient? No. That's not what we're saying at all. But what we need to be cautious of is that pushing things like cost efficiencies at the expense of the customer experience or separately from the overall business value can be a big mistake. So our guest today is actually the co-author of a book on this topic, and I'm going to introduce him very briefly, and then he's going to tell us a bit more about himself. His name is Filippo Passerini, and his leadership as the president of Procter & Gamble's Global Business Services and CIO has been recognized as best in class in the industry. His strategies appear in numerous books, articles, and business reviews, and he is currently a consultant to several companies and C-suite executives. So I'm very excited to have him with us today. So Filippo Passerini, come on in, the weather's fine.
Wonderful. Thank you very, very much, Adam. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. So what we're going to do here is before we dive into the main thrust of what we're going to cover today is we're going to pull back the curtain. I read just a piece of your official bio and I was so impressed by it. I'm not even sure I'm worthy to be in your presence, and this is my show. So what we're going to do is have you tell us a bit in your own words about your journey and how it's brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. Take it away, Filippo.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Adam. Today, starting from the end and moving backwards, I'm in New York City. I am from Rome. I joined Procter & Gamble after university in Italy. Then I had my internet. A career. We moved 7 times, including Latin America, in Greece, UK, in Turkey, and now we've been in the US. I went from a number of positions, a number of roles, primarily in digital technology, but also business. In the last 12 years, as you indicated, I've been president for our global business service. So we pulled together all the process operations in Procter & Gamble, and we fundamentally ran all the backbone of our processes, from finance to HR, some supply chain, all of information technology, procurement, consumer call center, some sales, operations, and many, many more. So the organization, the scope was quite large. And for a number of reasons, we were seen best in class in the industry for many, many years. And what we try to reflect in the book Michael Hawthorne and myself as experience what we did and what worked well and what didn't work well for us. And so it's very much practitioners. Experience that we reflect in this book, something which is very applicable immediately.
Yeah. So you are, as I believe, the co-author of a new book called Revolutionizing Business Operations, which goes into how to build dynamic processes for enduring competitive advantage. So what I want to do is delve into at least a few of the topics from that book that I've had an opportunity to peruse and find very interesting. So the first point I want to cover is I remember back when I was thinking about climbing the corporate ladder after I got my MBA and such. And I was told that if I really wanted to make a mark, I should forget about my dreams of being a training and development director for a Fortune 100, that I should really go into sales because sales is what really matters to an organization. Now, I resisted that at the time, and it might have actually been one of the minor factors that cut short my corporate ladder climbing and segued me into entrepreneurship. But it's been my belief all along that the business processes are just as important, like your finance, your human resources, and that they're important to win in the marketplace too. So, is it more important for companies to have superior products? Is it more important for people to have the business process? Does this all have some impact on the winning that we can do?
Well, this is a very good question, Adam. And this is what happens, as you indicated at the beginning. Companies want to improve efficiency of their processes. That is, fundamentally reducing cost, improving service quality for the employees, for the customers, for the clients. And as you said, that this is, through a variety of different processes. Now, companies, they make products, they make services for their clients, for their customers, and processes are oftentimes seen as a necessary hell. You have to have processes to deliver the business, but these are not the business per se, and so it's always a second thought, second priority, and as a result of that, they become very stagnant and obsolete over time. So what happens, Adam, is that companies want to transform these processes, so they will make an intervention, some big programs, all arms up, but then after a while, they go back to the way it was before, and that becomes stagnant, repetitive one more time. We believe that there is a way to this madness to sort it out, and it is possible dynamically to keep these processes always fresh, always effective. And therefore, create a competitive advantage. To your point, then, this is important in our view for companies who have superior products, as well as for companies who are more in a commodity business, because it is applicable across the spectrum. The value of operating processes as a competitive edge rather than something that you try to minimize, reviews, and just run for lower cost. So this is the framework, and we believe there are three drivers that can help accomplish that. And there are different stages at which a company can evolve along the journey of moving from pretty much a default the way of running processes to a very intentional and strategic one.
Right. So, why does it seem like a lot of business transformation programs fail? We're going to jump around a little bit because there's a certain sequence here that I'm seeing as being very important. So, we spoke about business processes here. Now, what about the transformation side of it? And you know, with my understanding of how change management, organizational change, and those types of things work, and we see a lot of those actually fail. Now, why do they fail, and how can we avoid this failure?
Well, we believe there are three vectors that could fully help. One is fundamentally operating processes with the mindset of an open market, pretty much like any companies, unless you are in a monopolistic business. You will operate by creating pull, creating attractive value proposition for your customers. You are not pushing, you are not mandating your products, your services to them. The same we believe applies to business processes. We believe that companies can operate, should operate with the same mindset. We have seen firsthand the value of doing that, Adam. And fundamentally setting the rules, the KPIs, the metrics, the measures according to an open market. So fundamentally within the company, the open market, the customers will be stakeholders, will be employees who use these processes, will be senior managers, will be all the other constituencies within a company. So this is the open market. Then we believe that we need to drive accountability for individual processes, because some of these processes, Adam, as you know very well, they span multiple functions, multiple areas. And in doing so, there is a lot of hands-off, a lot of unnecessary touch points. The metrics, the measures for success are oftentimes fragmented. And we believe that by creating this central accountability by process, it is like running brands, like running a product. Like, for any product, you have clear brand management, a clear accountability. Now, this person is not in charge of everything, will not be in charge of necessarily selling, manufacturing, or other areas, but the accountability resides there. And we believe that the same model can and should be applied to processes. And finally, the third vector, the key driver is this dynamic operating model. So all the capabilities we need to constantly evolve, but constantly innovate processes, then part of the operating model. And this needs to be constantly transform. We have done. We have been in business now for 40 years, most of which with Procter & Gamble over 30. And now, in the last 7, 8 years, I've seen as an advisor several companies, and I am positive that when. To your point, the value creation through processes is not there. There is oftentimes one or more of these three pillars, three key drivers missing or incomplete.
Right. Now, you and Tony have argued in your book that, we're talking about business transformation, we're talking about business processes, but you gentlemen recommend that we take this a step further and we revolutionize our business operations. Now, I know it feels like in the first half here, we're defining a lot of terms, and I'm doing this for a reason so our listeners can understand the framework. So, you guys suggest that we need to revolutionize them as opposed to continually improve them. So, can you explain for us in real-world terms what we mean by that bifurcation?
Yeah, the reason why we use the word revolutionizing is because it's significant departure from the way companies operate at the present. As we said, processes, business processes, are seen as necessary to run the business. The less you spend, the better. When they get obsolete or stagnant, you have to intervene with a massive, typically program. We believe that all of that could should be become more of a continuous. And therefore, the revolution we refer to is in the mindset, is in the models, is in the framework. And in the book, we suggest a clear roadmap to get there. And the different stages, there are different four stages of evolution. And so think of this as a matrix. Four stages by three key drivers. So the open market rules, unified accountability, and then dynamic operating model. If we look at these three drivers times the four stages, we have per each one of these 12 blocks a clear set of suggestions on how you can continue to improve, to evolve. And again, we have seen it, Adam, firsthand in our job. And this is, I believe, one of the reasons why in global business services, which is fundamental by the organization I was in charge of and built and ran for 12 years. This is what made it best in class. It was not me, it was not necessarily a few individuals, but was the model. And we believe that this model is reapplicable. So at this point of our life, as you can imagine, we want to give back. And this is the spirit of this book, to share what we learned in this area, which could be truly, truly an incredible source of value for companies.
Yeah, certainly. So what I'm hearing in there is, and this might have been a sub point, but the idea of, for lack of a better phrase, sloganeering. In social media, we might call this hashtagging. It's the idea of creating a mantra that the organization can rally itself around.
And it is a combination of, to your earlier point, continuing to drive efficiency, of course, because cost is important. We want to continue to reduce cost to increase the quality of operations. So all of that will never be neglected or deprioritized. But this is not an either or. It is an end. We can do that, and we can increase the effectiveness. Effectiveness meaning building new models for the business, bringing automation, simplify, optimize some of these processes, and then constantly evolving towards innovation. It is fascinating how also mundane processes, could be truly, truly innovative, ongoing, and that is, where the value resides, because innovation forces us to think about how to generate greater experience, better experience for employees, or how to eliminate unnecessary touch points, or time that is not well spent on processes. So there is a lot to say about the effectiveness in addition to the efficiency, and thinking of a process as a product, as a brand, is a way to facilitate to enable that.
Right. So what are some of the other new skills that we should acquire if we want to be looking at revolutionizing the business operations rather than simply continually improving them or modifying them?
Yeah, like for any skill, driving the car, learning a sport, playing an instrument, the most efficient way is to follow a best-in-class way to do it. So someone has to tell you, look, this is the way you will serve in tennis. This is the way you would throw the ball in football. This is the way you put your hands on your piano board. So there is a best way to apply the technique. And if we have to discover by trial and error, so by observing others, it may take a long, long time and not necessarily we learn the right way. So if someone tells us, look, the best way to drive the car or the best way to play the sport, the technique is this. It is much more efficient. So I believe people can benefit from knowing how to do it, how best to do it. Then we need to implement it. And we would strongly recommend learning on the job. So, pushing water through the pipes with your own teams. And then of course, so we need to validate what you are doing, but the skills, as you indicated at the beginning, are much has to do with change management, but applying that to this area, not just in general. And then process mapping. This is a very, very good skill to possess. How would you map out the process? How do you increase the accelerate the cycle time? How do you increase the effectiveness of the process? So these are some of the skills which could be very helpful, but the way to acquire the skills, in my experience, the best way is to learn the most effective way to do it, like for any skill, and then do it with your own organization for the most part.
Right. So how do you suggest that senior leaders go about introducing this idea in their organizations? We're talking about like your CEOs, government leaders, nonprofit leaders. So to me, this sounds like a segue into sponsorship, if I'm getting that correctly.
Yeah, what we suggest in the book, so we have codified some of these models, and let me actually to this point offer this observation. And I have found out that the best way to transfer knowledge to know-how is to go from empirical to the model, to the framework, because the empirical experience makes it real. Otherwise, becomes theoretical, conceptual, without a. But the empirical experience alone is anecdotal. You have one story after the other. You may say, "Oh, good, well done," but you don't know what to do with that. So when we combine empirical experience with what is the model behind it, why things happen the way they happen, then knowledge transfer is very effective. So in the book, what we offer, what we propose is to establish, several tools like a clear organization in place with central accountability, then building up some of the skills and market understanding, which for us will be our internal companies, establish the clear metrics which are oriented to the effectiveness in the business, not just the efficiency of each individual process. We suggest managing these processes end to end, like a product. It's not fragmented the responsibilities. So all these steps are indicated in the box, so that it becomes the guide almost that hopefully the readers, the business leaders can implement at least several of these suggestions. But there is in the book there's a clear roadmap to your question around how to go about it, how to set up the organization model, the organization structure, how to set the best measures which are conducive to getting the results we want, how to drive central accountability, and how to build a dynamic operating model.
Yeah, certainly. So what can be done to create this culture of change acceptance when it comes to the revolutionizing side of it? And I've been around the fields of change management and organizational change, and I've worked for companies and I've been involved in teams. And, you know, I have one thing that I've noticed is a trend across all of these different pieces I've been involved in or have witnessed that seems to be one of the biggest impediments. It's a small thing, but seems like a small thing, but it tends to be the linchpin. But what, you know, again, what should leaders do to go about making this acceptance part happen?
We believe that the best way to do it, and this is an area that your question is very, very good, because this is a bit, you know, some of the common challenge or some of the questions people have in mind. How do I drive people to support, adopt, embrace change? We have found that, first of all, it has to be what we call a pull, not a push. So we believe that we should not mandate change. We should articulate the value of change in a way that people are truly willing to support and embrace, right behind it. So this is something that we have done, we have experienced ourselves, and frankly has been one of the defining factors as to why probably the work we did was in best in class. But the so is creating value in a way that people feel they want to be part of this change. And then the second and more important part, because this first one is fairly obvious, is to articulate the value at three different levels. Why it is right, why is the right thing to do for the business, why it is the right thing to do for the organization, and why it is the right thing to do for you personally, Because the people fundamentally want to do what is right for the business. We are all professionals, we are responsible, we want to collaborate in that value. So that's important to clarify why that is such a value for our company, for our business. Secondly, people want to belong to a winning team. So articulating why this is good for the business to do, why this is something that for the organization to do, why this will make the organization better, more effective, more performant, and therefore we will be seen as a leading organization within the business. And this is something that people respond to very, very strongly, because, you know, as we said, we want to be part of a winning organization. And thirdly, and most importantly, probably why it is the right thing to do for you, and that could be professional development, that could be an opportunity to learn a new area of the business, that could be a variety of good reasons why for you there's a change is effective. But this is, in my experience, a very, very strong way to get people to truly embrace a change. So it's creating positive energy and creating a desire to embrace and support the change, whether it is in a small process or a big change or a mega transformation program. The tools are pretty much really applicable in all cases.
Certainly, certainly. Now, how is this all different from digital transformation? And if you could define that term for us as well.
Well, the digital is every time people think of change or business transformation, process transformation, people think of digital. Now, if you know very well, Adam, that if you ask 10 different people, what do you mean by digital transformation, you get very different answers. And it's not surprising because each one of us comes from a different background. But our position is that digital transformation, which fundamentally means bringing new technologies to create capabilities to automate. This is something that the ultimate goal is to transform the way business is done. This is the ultimate goal, and that's how you know the digital transformation becomes an enabler to transform the wiring of the company, the processes of the company, because you know fundamentally what companies want to do. They want to run their processes, as we've been saying, you know, more effectively, more efficiently, more innovatively, and digital is one way to accomplish that. But connecting the dots, and the reason why we made a comment earlier that it is so important to map out processes and the skills of process. Change or change management is because fundamentally, before applying technologies or digital transformation, we need to make sure that we eliminate, streamline, simplify this process. And that's why the skill is so important.
Certainly, certainly. So, in your work with Procter & Gamble, what made them so successful at doing this whole thing of revolutionizing their business operations?
Well, we have truly connected very, very strongly with the business. Now, again, this seems pretty obvious, but what we have done is to run our operations, our business processes, truly, truly, as a business. And that's how the three drivers that I indicated come in. So we interacted with the business, not as a monopolistic organization who runs processes in the back office, but as a business partner, as a business leader who wants to add value to the business. So what we call the open market mindset was very, very important, very, very critical, because we believe that we had to earn the right to create value and to show to the business how the value was coming. So this mindset and the tools associated with this mindset and the skills were truly, truly critical. Then we drove this clear accountability end-to-end. So if you take a process in finance or in supply chain or in procurement or in sales, we were making sure that there was a person in charge of delivering value through this process for the business. And the value comes in the form of lower cost per unit, better experience, better results, better performance, more innovative, more automated. So this, you know, clear accountability as we've been talking, and then constantly looking at the evolution of the model, the operating model, so that we were Bringing in the new skills, new capabilities, building out the new tools for the business and for our own organization. So we follow a very, very rigorous roadmap, and this is what we have reflected in the book. And this is the stages per each stage, the three drivers slash stage. What are the interventions to make to move to the next phase? So it's a pretty robust roadmap that makes a company know exactly what they have to do, given their starting point, how to continue to evolve.
Yeah, certainly. So I guess the next thing that I would be, curious to discover here is what does AI, artificial intelligence, have to do with this? How can these types of technologies be used for business operations today is part one. And then part two, based on your experiences, what opportunities do we have to utilize them even better than they already are?
Yeah, we have seen over the years, and as you know very well, several technologies that at the beginning were seen as breakthrough, transformational, and then they faded a bit, or they didn't materialize as well as that was initially anticipated and initially thought. So with AI, shows a lot of promising opportunities. I would think of AI like for any technologies as something that can be a big enabler to make operations better, faster, eliminate unnecessary duplicated inspections or duplicated interventions, or a variety of different opportunities to make more efficient. But again, it's one of the technologies, so if could be very, very powerful. But I would keep the North Star before us, and the North Star is to transform the way business is done.
Yeah, certainly, certainly. So, as we wrap up here, a lot of our listeners are actually businesses that are in the transition from startup to revenue, and in that place where they're moving from being solopreneurial to becoming leveraged organizations. So these are two inflection points where everything we've covered today just begins to acquire relevancy, which is part of the reason I wanted to have you on today, which is to give them a foreshadowing of what they can look forward to. So, how is this book that you've created, and how is your message relevant to organizations beyond the big companies like Procter and Gamble? What about small companies, nonprofits, public sector? How does it play into those?
Yeah, this is actually another very, very good question, which we get a lot in general in our advisory work. I would argue that for smaller companies, this is even more important because the flexibility you have within our resources capacity can be more limited. So for smaller companies, it could be even more impactful. Now, the beauty of what we're talking here is that this is applicable transversally across all sectors, all sizes of a company, whether small or big, the same model, exactly the same operating principles, the same criteria can be applied. This makes it very, very powerful because the value you get from the discipline, from the rigor of applying these frameworks, these models, is a truly, truly valid for any companies of any size, of any sectors.
Right. Okay, great. So, As we finish up here, I just want to, first of all, encourage of all of our listeners to check out this book. So this it's actually a book co-written by you and Tony Saldana, and it's called, let me just find it here, Revolutionizing Business Operations, How to Build Dynamic Processes for Enduring Competitive Advantage. It just came out a couple months ago. It's been getting a lot of media attention. In fact, part of the reason you're here on the Business Creators Radio Show is because I've seen you in other places and requested that you guys come on board. So very delighted to have you here. And what's really, you know, what you really want to think about as you make your decision to go to www.rbo-book.com. That's www.rbo-book.com, and get the book by Tony Saldana and Filippo Passerini, is that you can't risk the consequences of your work processes becoming obsolete. What you need instead is a new model for constant, ongoing, enterprise-wide process evolution and optimization. So, you know, one thing I want to actually circle back on before we end here is one of the premises in what I discovered skimming this book myself in preparation for this interview is that we have seen sometimes where operational efficiency, translated to cost efficiencies, can be at the expense of customer experience. So how does this happen? How does this become a rational business decision for people to actually allow the customer experience to take second place to some notion of operational efficiency?
Yeah, just as a final comment, perhaps, this is exactly the situation that happens to many, many companies to drive efficiency with the best intention. You end up not only in driving the right effective interventions on the business, but you create inefficiencies in other areas of the business. One of the stories that we illustrate in the book is when I moved internationally for the fourth or fifth time, going from the U.S. Back to Europe. And in this transfer, the way these international moves go, Adam, as you probably know, you work with your HR local person, she will explain all the policies. The movers who come into the house to pack your household goods, you know, school hunting, house search in the new location. There is, you know, all of that with, you know, moving a family, sometimes kids, school age, maybe pets. And this has been going on for a long, long time. Then what happened is that we, in a spirit of being more efficient, Procter & Gamble, we created global vendors. So the idea was you scale, you know, you create volume that will lower the price, the cost of moving the goods internationally, you know, moving cars, visas, all the administrative paperwork required, and so forth. So this is something that implied creating global vendors. And I was one of the first to go through this first model. This was prior to my time in global business operations. And it was a very, very difficult experience, because an interaction with your local HR person, and you talk to her, and you will work out what is required, the paperwork, the physical move, the finding the right place to live in the new location internationally. All of that became making phone calls to, global suppliers who were in the other end of the world, and they could not relate to my issues. So to me, it became very, very inefficient, and I felt I was highly penalized by that. So for the processes, for the organization running these processes, I'm sure it was more efficient because, again, you drive scale, you leverage scale, and probably you reduce the cost significantly. But for the employees, for the customer in this case, which was me, the client, the customer of the service, it was not any better. It was much worse. So we need to be very, very careful when which we don't drive efficiency at the expense of doing what is right for our internal organization. In this case, was me myself as an employee of the company, but it could be external customers, it could be suppliers, it could be clients, it could be consumers. So this is why we believe it's important to do one and the other, and then keep innovation in mind so that we continue to evolve the process. And that's how the three drivers, open marketplace, unified accountability, and dynamic process. Operating model, dynamic operating operations are so important because they define the roadmap and the tools and the skills in the organization model we have to build, not to neglect one, not to focus on one value at the expense of another.
Exactly. And I appreciate you sharing all that with us. So again, I'll invite our listeners, check out the book Revolutionizing Business Operations at www.rbo, as in Revolutionizing Business Operations, -book.com. And with that, Filippo Passerini, thank you so much for being with here today.
Okay.
It's been an honor and believe me, an education.
It's been a pleasure for me as well, Adam. Thank you so much, and we'll keep in touch. Thank you for
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.